the general rule of thumb that I have is avoid packaging changes, keep things on autopilot. If you've been buying it, keep buying it, minimize disruption.
Let's do this. So Rayburn's is a microwavable sandwich that's selling millions of sandwiches a year, and it's available in your grocer's freezers from coast to coast in the U.S. You guys have recently gone through a redesign and reformulation. We're going to get into the why and the challenges and the how of a redesign. So today we've got Doug Hall that's joining us from Rayburn's. Thank you so much for being on here. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Can you give us just a quick rundown on how you find yourself doing the work that you're doing with Rayburn today?
Okay, it's a little bit of a journey, and I would say I have a very non-traditional background when it comes to marketing. I started my career as an organic chemist. So my educational background is in organic and analytical chemistry. I was in flavors and fragrances as a flavor and fragrance chemist for quite a while before moving over into sales. And I was in technical sales, got my MBA during that time, and then moved over into the marketing world. So I've been in a couple of different industries, food, beauty, laundry, a little bit all over the place. Early on in my career, I started with some of the big companies and learned a whole lot about brand representation and you know, how you connect with the consumers to begin with. That tied with my R&D background has really brought me to a place today where I feel like this brand restage that we're doing is going to be very well thought out, very in touch with consumers, and hopefully something that'll be really good for the company.
So you're doing marketing, but you didn't start in marketing.
Right.
So how does that science, chemistry background, and I think there's some psychology in there as well, how does that lead to marketing?
Yeah, I also have a PhD in organizational psychology. It's been interesting. I'm a lifelong learner, so I am all about, you know, mastering one skill set, and then I'm naturally curious to see something else. So my career has been a really good way of starting off in the labs, and then I would start to work with some of the sales and marketing people. I'm like, oh, what you do is kind of interesting. I'm going to understand that a little bit more, and then start to work on some of these projects where you get to go and meet with the customers and talk about some of the problems they have. And then the deeper I went in business, I find that it really is all science-based, whether it is a physical science like organic chemistry or whether it's a social science like psychology or business. They all have a similar thought process and understanding what a problem is, being analytical with the approach, and then going through execution.
IDP Direct, pioneering factory direct sustainable luxury, packaging, logistics, and design. They're not just manufacturers. Your partners in eco excellence. IDPdirect.com. If finding your spec data is a wild goose chase around your office, you've got a data problem. Specrite is the only cloud-based management specification solution that every brand needs. If you don't spec right, you'll spec wrong. Give me just a quick explanation of organizational psychology.
Okay. Organizational psychology. So general psychology is understanding the motivations and behaviors of individuals. Organization takes all of those individual behaviors and really encompasses it in the full organization. So some of the basic things would be like, you know, what's the culture of the organization? What are the underlying values and assumptions? How is the leadership model structured? What does the incentive structure look like? So a really cool project that I got to work on a couple of years ago as COVID started, I was going down to our manufacturing facilities and trying to understand, okay, hey, people are scared to come into work right now because of the transfer of COVID. What are the things that we can do as an organization to make them feel safe? So we put in barriers and we brought in, you know, additional cleaners that were running around and wiping down just doorknobs every 30 minutes. And we brought in and implemented masks. And on top of that, we took a look at the pay structure and the incentive structure. So all of these things really combine from an organizational psychology perspective to make a better workplace for our employees.
Does that translate to the consumer as well? Like, can you look at the consumer as an organization in and of themselves?
There's some of that, but the thought process is very similar in terms of understanding behaviors, right? So when I was down in, we have a plant down in Mississippi, one of the things that I did was really started to engage with the employees and go out to the smoke break and chit chat with them like, hey, What do you like about the company? What don't you like about the company? And after the initial shock of who are you and why are you asking these questions,
who's this guy
they were
talking
pretty
to me?
Open about it. I don't know who you are. Why are you here? And you know, as I explained to them, hey, my whole goal here is to understand, you know, why you come into work and what we can do to make it a better workplace for you. Same thing with the consumers, right? It is all about asking a bunch of questions, understanding their behaviors, and then seeing how I can influence that. To me, that is marketing, is trying to influence the behaviors of consumers, trying to find a need that they have today that is unmet, and then filling that need.
You know, you've been at P&G and a few other large companies. Looking at Rayburn as kind of like a small company, even though you guys are making a million sandwiches a week and you've got a couple thousand employees. Has there been anything that you've learned throughout your career that you see yourself using every day at Rayburn's?
Absolutely. I would say number one is, and I learned a huge amount of respect for Procter & Gamble, right? They've been doing what they do for almost 200 years. So they know consumers, they know branding, and they know customer affinity. So I was fortunate enough to go through brand college there. And the things that they teach you is it starts with the consumer. Everything you do in marketing should start with the consumer. What are they like? What are they missing? What are their needs? You know, how do you look at the brand today and what do they like about it? So there's things like the color. And I think a really good example of it's a little bit of an older one, but Folgers, you have a slogan that goes with Folgers, or you have the color that goes with Tide. All of those things consumers grow to love and know without even knowing that they love it. So a big part of what we looked at moving into this transition for us is how do you avoid disruption to the things that they know and love and still get them to get excited about a new product?
So what were the brands you were working at P&G?
So I worked under a couple different ones. I was part of the laundry and soap division early on. So that would be things like Tide, Gain, Zest soap was there at the time. Shampoos and conditioners were something that I worked on as well. So Pantene was there. Head and Shoulders was there. So I started off my career there and then moved into it was luxury beauty at the time. So think fine fragrances. At the time, they owned Gucci and Dolce & Gabbana fragrances. They had, let's call it luxury hair care and colors. So things like Wella and Clairol. So it was a hodgepodge of things there. And then moved into the food industry after P&G.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I had a good friend, a mentor of mine that was at P&G, and he was on Tide as well. And I just remember him explaining, you know, a little bit about marketing, right? Which a lot about marketing, but like one component that always stuck with me, he's like, you know, those little blue dots in the soap. He's like, that's just spray paint. Not spray paint, but it's just color. You know, he's like, it just mixes up and people feel somehow that like this blue dot in here makes it clean better than if you compare it to just a white powder.
It's interesting. Soap. I know a whole bunch about soap and I actually worked on those little blue dots when I was in research and development. But, one thing that consumers associate with clean is going to be, you know, even in the shower, when you're sudsing up or when you see the suds in a washer and dryer, none of that actually does the cleaning. So consumers see that and they think more suds, more cleaning. But the reality is like, whether there are suds or not, it's going to do the cleaning job. And that really throws people off. But I think that's another really good example of, you know, what consumers attribute to a brand. You know, if you were to buy some laundry detergent, you didn't see that sudsing, you'd be like, I'm not buying this again. So that's an important attribute of that brand and of that category that consumers need to see and should be a consideration for any new products and launches.
That's crazy. And then, all right, so getting to Rayburn's, you guys have, you guys do sandwiches, Philly cheesesteaks. You're the number one selling Philly cheesesteak.
Yep.
That's not based in Philly, right?
That's right.
All right. So brands are always considering a redesign. I just had on somebody from a company called Lona Life, and he's like, we launched packaging and product. And we spent so much time at the beginning of it that we were married to this design, even though it wasn't working. It's like, we just didn't want to move away from it. So I know it's hard for brands to change, but then there's also brands that launch and they're like, we're just changing. We're going to, you know, if it's like a D2C small startup, they're changing on a constant basis because somebody feels a little bit differently today. A brand as big as Rayburn's and with as much product and volume out there, what prompted a redesign? Why a redesign and why now?
Great question. And I'll start with this journey for us. I tend to be very change adverse. I do not like to change packaging. I do not like to see any major changes. I've been through enough brand changes now to see first thing a marketer wants to do when they come in is they want to update the packaging and refresh things. You're spot on with that. I'm very adverse to that because I've worked on a couple of brands now, including the Tyson brand, where we tried to do that and it ended up with very, very, very poor results. So I'll share that example with Tyson. While I was like working there, we were getting ready to go through a brand restage. And the amount of money that went into this restage was just insane as it comes to consumer research and as it comes to the product design and photo shoots and the packaging. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful design. Everything fit cohesively before what they had. And even if you go on shelf now and take a look at them, they have the red Tyson and there's the green Tyson and then there's any Tizers. And you can tell it's one brand, but it's not a very cohesive look, which happens over time with a lot of brands. So what they were trying to do was they were trying to bring it together as one, you know, one cohesive looking brand. When you go down the frozen aisle, boom, there's Tyson. So conceptually it was a really cool idea. Tested it with consumers, tested it with retailers. Anyways, we ended up going to Walmart. We wanted to start with them with the relaunch. And they said, wait a minute, this is a pretty big change. Yes, it's beautiful packaging. Yes, we understand what the online consumer research says. But let's slow down a minute and just let's test this out in a couple of our DCs. Tested it out and the results, I mean, saw sales drop something like 30%. Okay. Wow. So then we bring in some of the consumer psychologists that come in and we're like, what happened here? This was a multi-million dollar relaunch and we can't move forward with this. It's essentially wasted at this point because it had such poor in market results. And what they told us was these shopper marketers told us, they said, hey, anytime you make a visible change, you're forcing the consumer to think. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds bad, but the reality is, yeah, you're forcing them to think. Something's changed on shelf. And now that I'm looking at the shelf, if I have to think about what I've always known and bought, then I'm going to go ahead and take this whole set into consideration. Meaning my competition, oh, and look at this competition's packaging and look at this competition. They have this. They have this. Since I don't know what I'm buying anymore, I'm going to pick something new that fits better for my lifestyle now, which I thought was really interesting. So, you know, the general rule of thumb that I have is avoid packaging changes, keep things on autopilot. If you've been buying it, keep buying it, minimize disruption.
Okay.
So that's how we start. That's in general for the past couple of years, that's how I approached it. But your question was, okay, what started this for us? Okay.
but that was great, right? Because I think you're right. If I'm going to the store and I'm buying X product, I know what it looks like. I cook a ton and I bake a ton. I spent a couple of years trying to perfect the chocolate chip recipe for my kids, but really for me, because I love chocolate chip cookies. I can walk in to the two grocery stores nearest me. I know exactly what chocolate I'm looking for. I can walk right in. I can look at it and I can grab it just, you know, in seconds. If that packaging changed, I would do the same. I would stop and I'd go, okay, well, something changed in the bag. So if I'm going to try that, let me see what else is out there. What else, you know, what else I can buy, and I'm going to find something different. And I may end up falling in love with that one, or that just may become the go-to.
Yep. Spot on. That's the psychology behind, you know, and you have to take this into account as you think about brand restages. And as you think about, it all comes down to the consumer and what's going on in the consumer's head. And they have 87 other things that they're trying to do when they're at the grocery store, and they know they have to go pick up the kids, and they know they have to do this and that. Make as little disruption to their normal schedule as possible.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. So then with Rayburns, like, what prompted this design?
So we knew going into it all goes down like many stories around COVID. We knew going into COVID, we were going to see a bump to our sales. We did. We saw a pretty huge bump. And analyzing why, schools were closed. So now you had to feed your kids. And Rayburns, they're really good for kids in between meals, snacks. I love eating them as well, but they're really good. You know, an 8-year-old can pop it in the microwave and it's 60 seconds and you're done. Yeah. So we knew that we were going to see a big increase from that. schools were closed, restaurants were closed. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're working from home and you need a quick snack too. Again, all of these non-perishable items or these longer shelf life items started to increase in sales. The other piece was, at least for the first year or so, we saw consumers were nervous about going into the grocery store. So they were buying, they were making more infrequent trips, and they were buying the more frozen foods. They were buying all these non-perishables. So we saw this huge bump in sales. Okay, post-COVID, right? Everything that happened that drove a lot of our sales, and this is not just us. This was the frozen category in general. Sure. So a lot of folks are in the same position. Post-COVID, restaurants open back up. People are starting to travel again. People are starting to go back into the office. Kids are back in school. So we were expecting to see a level off. What we saw, and also during that time period, most frozen manufacturers were having a difficult time keeping up with that demand, right? When your demand goes up 150%, 200% within a couple of months, yeah, you're really struggling. On top of that, people have stopped coming into work and they're getting these, you know, there's incentives for unemployment. So we were having a hard time really keeping up with demand. So we ended up cutting out a lot of innovation. We put a lot of that on hold. We ended up discontinuing a couple of our non-core products just to keep up with our bread and butter, which is that Philly cheesesteak. So flash forward, now that, you know, folks have started going back to restaurants, they've started, you know, eating at schools again, sales have leveled off. And what that's forcing us to do is get back to the old thought process of, we need innovation, we need to get people excited when they come down the frozen aisle, and we need to make sure that we're giving people a reason to buy Rayburns again as we're competing with the grocery stores, or as we're competing with restaurants, and we're competing with different areas. So that was the thought process here, was things have leveled off, and you know, we're starting to see a lot of innovation in the category again. It's time to do something.
I spent time at culinary school, like that, like cooking and food was my future until I realized I hated cooking for people that were paying. I cook for people I love. People that are paying, they feel I have an opinion on food, so I'm like I can't do that. They're just kill my love, my passion for it. But so yeah, I love cooking fresh. I love all that stuff. But I remember during COVID, I bought tons of like canned and frozen food because I'm like, I don't know when this grocery store is going to shut down. And I found myself donating most of it, like all my canned stuff. I'm like, I'm never going to eat this stuff. But yeah, I can totally see why during that time period, it would just scale up.
Yeah.
Again, as a consumer, as a designer, you don't necessarily think about that. You're just going through your life day to day, but like these are opportunities for brands to be like, all right, now it's time to pivot and shift, which is, again, this is like something as a brand owner, a startup founder, to be looking at and be like, okay, well, now's the time to do something different. With this change, you have CBX that you bring in to do the redesign. How do you find CBX? Like, how does a brand that's looking to redesign, recreate packaging, kind of make a big visual shift, how do you find the right agency?
Great question. I would say there's a couple of agencies that I've worked with over the years, even the Procter & Gamble days, even the Tyson days, that I know that I can go to and we get a huge amount of support and help. So my tried and trues are the ones that I tend to start off with. But even before we brought them in, the thing that I thought about was, you know, what are we even trying to do here? So I wanted to take it before we get to the packaging. It was, you know, what products do we even want to offer? And are we offering the right products? So really dug deep into consumer, you know, consumer behaviors and trends there. And thing that we found was, hey, when it comes to sandwiches, one, sandwich eaters eat 72 sandwiches a year, and that trend is growing. So we know that that's a good place to be. There's a good spot to own there. They want familiar ingredients. So you can get super creative and you can offer, you know, these really out there ideas that may be growing trends, but consumers tend to eat the exact same thing, the exact same sandwich multiple times throughout the year. So instead of going way far out there, we decided let's stick with the number one bread is a hoagie roll. Let's just stick with the hoagie roll. They want, you know, the four cheeses are the American, cheddar, Swiss, and provolone. Let's just stick to the tried and true. And then when it comes to, you know, the meats, it's beef, it's pork, it's chicken. It's pretty basic. So started there. And then, you know, when we were ready to bring in the agency work on this, we started broad, very, very broad in terms of, hey, let's see we've done over the past 20 years from a brand evolution standpoint. Let's take a look at what our competition looks like on shelf. Let's take a look at what our competition looks like on shelf by channel. And it was such a cool workshop, and I was able to bring in the CEO for this, and I was able to bring in some of the brand gurus from across our holding company, which was a really cool way to do it. And we just kind of went really deep into, is our representation today what it needs to be in order to be competitive in the category and in the channel? And it was a very interesting conversation. And we came out of that thinking, yes, we think that there's some things that we can do. It definitely has. And it was cool, too, because the area we did this was we had a bunch of younger food scientists. So we would bring them in. You know, you're talking this recently, you know, college grad, young age. Hey, come in. We have an idea for you. What do you think of this? Without any context. And they said, well, kind of looks like something my grandma would buy. Okay, that is a very important factor in this. Yeah. So, you know, when it came to the logo, when it came to, you know, I didn't want to change a whole lot, but they were like, yeah, it looks a little dated. That type of intel was really helpful when we pulled together this brain team just to debate where we were going and what we were doing. Once we had that done, then that's when we move over to, you know, the packaging development, and we kept a very firm stance on minimal change. Side by side, new and old graphic need to look similar, and they need to be very recognizable, right? I talked earlier about how we could lose them. When they're side by side, I need the consumers not to have to think about it. So that was the key principle that we started with.
Wow. Okay. And then having it be something that your grandma buys is definitely no hate towards grandmas, right? I love
no hate towards grandma. Yep.
But
no hate towards grandma.
You also don't want them to be the target on a product that's definitely has a younger demographic.
And that's it. And even it was interesting talking with the younger group. We were like, hey, are we just kind of aging out? And they said, no, we love sandwiches. You know, you're out and you're drinking with your friends, and you come home and you pop in a sandwich. Like this type of food doesn't go away. Even though if you sit down with them and ask them what they want, oh, we want, you know, gluten-free, and we want healthy, and we want high protein.
Right.
At the end of the day, the behaviors, regardless of age group, is, hey, you go towards what's convenient and easy when it's available.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I mean, it's funny that they went to, you know, grandma and dated. And I think what's important, you know, from a consumer's perspective, if I see something on the shelf that looks dated, I would assume that the contents are also dated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So it's like, I'm not looking for like a 1980s flavor, because back then things were salty. You know, like you have these, you've got this vision of what that product is based on the packaging. And on your product, it's packaged with a flow wrap. It's completely opaque, so you can't see the product inside. So you've got photography that's selling this different types of sandwiches. How did you handle photography on this type of a pack to make sure that the color was standing out, people could clearly differentiate between, you know, a roast beef sandwich and like a Philly cheesesteak, and identify the different products quickly?
Yep. So going into this, we had a Philly cheesesteak and a roast beef and cheddar, same breads, very similar colors. I mean, one was orangey yellow, and then one was an orangey, the color blocking for it. So going into it, we knew that we needed to further differentiate those, because honestly, I don't know that consumers knew that there was a difference when you saw them on shelf.
Yeah.
So color blocking was important. Photography was a really big one for me too. And normally I would have gone with tried and true one here, but I wanted to try something a little different. And we started with a test. And it's interesting. I live in a unique building here in Chicago, which is the Bloomingdale Arts Building. And it is full of all of these professional artists and creative thinkers, and there's a photographer here. And I said, hey, you know, have you ever done food photography before? She says, I've done a bit, but I'd love to get into it a little bit more. So I thought, okay, let's test and see if we can do this. And she's an excellent photographer. I mean, just amazing at the work that she does. So I thought, okay, one, it's easy because it's local. It's right here for me. Let's do a test and see how it turns out. And we took a couple of pictures of the Philly and a couple of different areas. She was able to put a really great creative spin on it. And it was good enough where, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have gotten all the bells and whistles. So we had to, you know, we had to go out and buy our own props, and we had some minor challenges here, but her photography was so excellent that we ended up using her for the full photo shoot. What I loved about it was, you know, after we fine tuned the, you think of the colors here that you use, meat's important because you don't want brown and gray in any of those colors. People want to think of the meats as the pinks, the roses, the reds. That's what they tend to gravitate towards. Some browns, the warmer browns. So she was really good at fine tuning a lot of that. And then when we did the photo shoot, we ended up booking for a full week. And that included a couple of food stylists and the photographer's assistant. And we had my associate brand manager here and a full creative team. It was a pretty cool experience. But, you know, a lot of that was let's test it, see what we like and what we don't like. Let's marry it up with the new graphics and the new images and see what needs to be fine tuned. And we had a couple of bumps during the photo shoot, just some unexpected things, but it turned out much better than I could have possibly expected. But to me, it was a combination of the color blocking and the colors of and the colors and the hues of the actual sandwich that really brought it to life.
Okay. And then kind of looking at the packaging, you've got it's a flow wrap. It's a rectangle. You've got the sandwich taken up maybe about a quarter of the pack, which like immediately it seems like it's small, right? Like I would think you're like, I want, give me half, give me as much real estate on the sandwich so people can see it. But it works really well because you have a lot of white space all the way around it and it draws the focus to the sandwich. And it's like at an angle, you got the logo that sort of balances it out because it's like a little bit to the left of it. And it's at an angle also. So you're getting these lines that kind of move your eye across this pack.
Yep.
You've got the red on the logo, the warm colors on the sandwich. And there's a lot of warmth to this. A lot of times you'll see brands kind of bringing in the greens and these other colors because they've heard so much that, you know, reds and greens are going to sell food. But, you know, you can't, mixing cools and warm colors can be off-putting at times. So like the combination of colors you have here are really warm and bright. But the white really makes everything kind of stand out easily, which is great. And I think from a food perspective, white in a sandwich feels kind of deli-ish.
That's exactly what we're going for is we want that. So here you bring up, I'm glad you said that unprompted. So there were a couple things. We ended up doing some consumer research on the existing packaging and the new packaging and wanted to find out, you know, one, before we started the work, we wanted to find out what's important to them. Four things that it should not be a surprise, but they said packaging appeal is important, product variety and flavor, the photography is really important, and the product claims. Those are the four things that they brought. And they said, hey, your current packaging is not bad, but there's areas that can be improved. And so what we did coming out of that research was we contemporized the logo. So there's little things that honestly, without having the design support that we did, I wouldn't have known about this, but shadowing behind the brand. If you take that shadowing away, that makes it more modern. Campbell's Soup did this a couple years ago in their new packaging. It has evolved. You know, you go and you look at them side by side in the beautiful packaging and you're like, I get why they did this. They didn't lose the consumer. You can tell exactly what it is, but they've modernized it. So that was one of the things we did was that we modernized the logo. We wanted that light and airy feel to capture the attention on shelf. And we had these huge debates about what is the right color on shelf. We're usually next to Hot Pockets, which is going to be red. You have Uncrustables here, which has a very signature pattern. You have White Castle. So all of these have these really bold colors. Is the white going to be okay? So we ended up putting it next to it to see if it ends up popping. And we thought the white was a really good way of making it pop on shelf.
Excellent. Then you've got like a repeating pattern or it's either what's on the left or right? Is it text or just a logo repeating? It's hard to see. Oh, it's just the logo like repeating.
Yep.
Oh, see, so for anybody that's listening, it's, you know, again, it's like a rectangular flow wrap. So kind of like a Snickers bar, but bigger for a sandwich. And then down the center, you've got this block where the sandwich kind of overhangs and there's a little shadow on the right side. So it looks like it's almost a paper wrap going around this, like a deli wrap, right? So you've got the repeating pattern on the left and the right, which is like what's wrapped around the sandwich. And then you have like this faux deli wrap square that goes around the middle, like a sleeve. Looking at these as a consumer, it feels like a deli sandwich, right? Which I would assume is the goal here. Yeah. What's been the response now, like having this on shelf versus the previous sandwich?
I would say we're still early in the relaunch here, but feedback has been really good. So initial consumer testing, we saw a very nice jump in appeal and purchase intent. I've been going out personally with all of our sales team, and there's multiple facets here. So I've been going out with our sales team who are excited to have something to sell again, right? So they have a reason to go in front of their customers and get the customers excited. And we pulled together these really cool frozen, we have these little boxes that we send in that have one of each of the sandwich when we go in front of a buyer or in front of any influencers. So they have this really cool branded box that opens up and it has a beer cozy. And anyway, so there's a lot of buzz that we're getting out of it. We have a lot of our core customers is the focus of transitioning them over right now. And then we have a big distribution drive. So we're expecting significant distribution increases over the next 6 months as a result of this restage. So the feedback has been phenomenal on the packaging and the changes to the packaging, also on the product itself, which to me is a very good winning combination.
Okay. So then how do you, so the packaging looks awesome. It's super clean, bright. You've got the color blocking happening, which is something that's current, you know, current trend in the freezer aisle. But how do you now then marry the pack and the excitement of the pack with the promise of the product and the packaging?
Great question. So I think there's a couple of areas here that that's a really good question. Initially, what I need to do is get the customers excited about it. Because if the customer, meaning the Walmarts of the world, the Costcos of the world, the Sams of the world, if the customer gets excited about it, then they're going to make sure that on shelf, they're getting excited about it. I'm calling it that first month of excitement. So the first month that it shows up, and every retailer kind of has a different reset date. That first month, I want to make sure that there's a bunch of free coupons that are circulating in the store. So if you know it, you're going to get one of those coupons and buy it. If you don't know it, you'll say, why not give it a shot? Right. And hopefully we can bring on some new consumers as a result of that. The second piece is going to be we'll have a huge media push during that time period when it shows up on shelf. And then the other thing is for that second repeat, let's say somebody's on the fence, when they walk by, I want to make sure that there is a discount on shelf that supports them buying it one more time. So I think the combination of the freebies and the giveaways up front, the in-store shopper marketing, and then that follow-up, hey, got it, it's on sale right now, going to buy it, will really help deliver against that promise.
Okay. And is there a number of purchases that you want to get out of a consumer, out of a new consumer, that at that point you feel, okay, if they can buy it four times, they're hooked for life? Like, and there may not be, I'm just curious, like, is there a number that you're targeting for a new consumer to come in and purchase it?
I think one, if I can get them to try it once, because mm-hmm. that's what it was for me. When I first came onto this business, I was like, man, I'm going to be selling frozen sandwiches. It doesn't sound very appealing. And it doesn't, because if you think about bread out of the microwave is either soggy or it's crusty, right? Yeah. So it took me one time to try it, and I was like, I'm sold on this brand. I was not expecting. And the promise that we have is bakery soft bread out of the microwave. And this product delivers on that. So I think if they try it once, there'll be repeat purchases.
Awesome. Awesome. And then you did, there's also, it's not just the packaging, you also reformulated the product.
Yep.
So do you find that the issue that you had with packaging where somebody tries it and they're like, okay, there's something different here, that you might lose that consumer as well? And how do you change it without changing it?
I think so. One, we didn't touch the Philly. So that, you know, because that's the number one seller. Yeah. If you are buying the Philly today, you have a certain expectation. So we didn't touch the Philly. But what we did was we took a couple of the existing items and really used QSR as inspiration here. So I have two data points, and I ask this for anybody that I'm talking about the restage with. When you think of a roast beef sandwich, what restaurant comes to mind?
Well, it's not a restaurant, but Arby's. Arby's is the one that comes to mind.
It's a restaurant. So I guess. That's the number one response is roast beef sandwich, Arby's.
But that's not where I would go for a roast beef sandwich.
Well, no, that's different. It's what do you think of? So, so we looked at Arby's sandwiches and we said, okay, let's take a look at the meat. Let's take a look at the cheese. Let's take a look at the bread. And what they had on their bread was this really interesting onion and poppy seed bread. In our previous offerings, all we had was just a regular hoagie. Mm-hmm. So we thought, why not put you know, onion and poppy seed on the bread and make it more similar to a, you know, the number one QSR offering.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I would say is, the other question I ask is, you know, if, what is the last protein most consumers have had on their sandwich? Any guesses?
Cheese. Or cheese is a protein, but meat. I'd say beef. Yeah.
That's a good guess. The statistic is, if you ask a consumer what's the last protein you had, they would say ham. And we didn't have a ham in our offering. So we thought, okay, let's pair the ham, and it's this real nice, sweet, smoky ham with a really cool and Hawaiian inspired sweet roll. So we brought that out, and now we've got two new rolls. And then we had a chicken bacon ranch, which quite frankly was just not a very good product. Mm-hmm. So we started from scratch, and it was a recommendation from our finance folks. They were like, hey, why don't you slice it instead of dicing it? And it gives this really cool, really cool sandwich. And we upgraded that and put that on a pretzel roll. So it was all of these different restaurants and fast food joints that we pulled from to create an elevated portfolio without, you know, majorly changing things.
But your finance, like your internal finance team, came up with the chicken.
Yeah.
That's awesome. There's never a bad idea.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good ideas don't have to come from a certain department. Good ideas can come from anywhere.
No, they don't. And I welcome that, right? They're the finance team's looking at this and they're like, hey, here's all the numbers. But, and she told us, she was like, I was just at this restaurant and they sliced the chicken and then they put the ranch on it and it was on a pretzel roll. And we were like, we can do that. Let's give it a try. And it was such a better product.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so cool. I love that. When you reformulate the product, is there a moment where you have to test it with the packaging, or at this point you already know that I don't have to test this with this packaging? These two different components are going to marry easily.
Have to test it with the packaging. And I do that a couple different ways. One is I like getting customer feedback. So I definitely like getting customer feedback. And then I also like getting consumer feedback. So I'll pull together a couple of different concepts and share that with some of our bigger customers to get, how does this sit with you? Do you like it or if you don't like it? And they don't necessarily have to like it, but it always helps if they do. And then we always like to do consumer research once we get a little closer to the final product to see if there's anything we need to fine tune to make sure that the two are married the right way.
Got it. And I'm looking at pictures online here of just consumers that have unprompted posted their own sandwich photos. I mean, these look like sandwiches. Which they should, but like they've been microwaved and they don't look like a microwaved sandwich, which seems like a feat in and of itself, right? Like I grew up having like the frozen burritos and all the different stuff. And when it comes out of a microwave, it looks like it's been microwaved. So that's awesome. I mean, the bread looks like it's fresh bread, that you've got a stack of meat on here. It's not those stacks of meat that you see where, you know, you've got the sandwich and it's like just pouring out on one side, but you cut it in half and it's like all just really packed in the front and like the back of the sandwich is empty.
Well, but these are all things that, I mean, we have to take into account, right? I mean, our consumers, this is feedback for anybody who eats a sandwich. If all the meat's on one side, they're going to let us know. So we, you know, have processes and designs and system in place that help us make sure that our production team calls it the perfect sandwich every time. Right. So anytime somebody bites into it, it needs to have the cheese on it. It needs to have the right amount of meat. The meat needs to be, you know, spread throughout. The bread has to look nice. So they do a wonderful job making sure the quality and the product really deliver.
Awesome. And then this is available everywhere across the country in the frozen section, like Costco's, Wegmans, like everywhere.
What I would recommend, we are growing in distribution. What I would recommend is going on rayburns.com, and we have a store finder on there. You can type in your zip code and you can literally, it'll tell you the closest store to you. But yeah, you can find us national distribution, Walmart, Sam's, Costco. We're going to be Dollar General. You can find us at a lot of different stores.
Like, definitely go in, check out the packaging. You might still see some old packaging. Right, like what's a rollout like this look like, and what's your run out of your previous packaging expected to be?
It's going to be pretty quick. So I'm thinking around January is when you're going to start to see most of the grocery stores phase out of the current packaging. And then we have a little bit longer lead time. We're trying to fine tune some of the packaging for Sam's, for Costco. And then I would say a dollar in C-store, you'll probably start to see that in February, March timing.
Okay.
But it's pretty quick rollout.
Are you selling through all the old packaging, or does something else like happen with old product in order to make that that switch?
It's a little bit of both. So we'll have, it's a balance between, how much inventory do we have today, both finished goods and packaging versus what those turn rates look like. So there's usually a bit of waste that comes as a result of this, but we're seeing some really good demand right now. So I don't expect to see a lot of tossing of the old packaging or donation of the existing products. We think that there's going to be a really good balance there.
Oh, that's killer. Doug, I appreciate you being on here and kind of sharing this whole story. I think a lot of people see like a redesign as something sexy and something cool. And I think like with anything else, there's just a ton of marketing behind it where, you see the latest redesign of brand X and you see all the press that they're getting.
Yeah.
But you never know, and that's like the exciting part. And as a marketer, you show up to a brand, you're like, all right, let's change packaging. Designer, you show up and you're like, I want to make my mark. But it can't be that quick of a change. Like there has to be a why, a how, like you have to plan it. And like from your process and planning this out, what are three takeaways that somebody listening to this can walk away from this episode and go, okay, did I do this? Did I follow this? And this is going to show me that I'm ready to take on a redesign.
Number one, I would say is, make sure there's a reason, a big reason to why you're doing this, right? If you're just trying to make your mark, there's other ways to make a huge mark. And that is, a bigger one would be just not messing up the brand. So I would say one, have a reason and a pretty big reason as to why you're doing this. Two, plan it out and look at all the different aspects. This is a cross-functional change. It's going to impact sales impacts. Marketing, of course, is driving this. The agencies are going to be involved. You have production that has to deal with this. So make sure everybody's holding hands and that there's constant communication and advanced planning of all the different areas that this is going to touch. And then third, I think, is budgets. Make sure you're really clear with budgets. This is not a cheap process at all. The photography, the brand redesign, the agency work, the packaging printup, the old product move out, all of that takes a huge amount of work. And there's you need to make sure that you're planning appropriately for that budget behind it.
Doug, thanks so much for being on. I appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. That's the show. Any questions anybody has, they can find you on LinkedIn, and I'd love for them to hunt you down. I'll have links in the show notes, and please ask Doug any questions that you've got on this, and go out and try Rayburn's sandwiches. The Philly cheesesteak is the number one selling sandwich, so I'm going to try that and see how that stacks up.